hour, and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, cat lovers, tops and bottoms of all kinds. Welcome into the big tent, the big liberal tent. Welcome, Mark Riley.
Where's my umbrella?
Oh, you don't need one if you're in the tent.
Oh, okay.
It's snowing outside, though. Tim, the librarian, on the board. Kalo's out this week, not sick, not on vacation, just at home.
Chilling.
Sitting there, being Kalo. I asked him what he was doing yesterday. I talked to him on the phone. He's like, I was hanging out, man. You know, I can't quite do a Kalo impression. Clutch Larson in the booth about to eat an orange or something. Very good. Good for you. He's lost like 900 pounds.
Uh-oh.
He's actually into negative pounds. He's just this weird void that walks around now, weightless. P.W. McDonald on the phones. Brendan, that's Brendan, and Dan Pashman, son of Linda Pashman, out in the night somewhere, you know, accumulating information, doing what he does best. So did you tell me it's your daughter's birthday today?
Today is Vivica's 8th birthday.
Happy birthday. What time does she listen to?
No, I'm only kidding.
What time does she listen?
She may be listening now, but I want to make sure she's there, because I know she's listening at 7, because she's got no school today.
All right, so we'll save the singing till 7.
7, yeah.
All right, that's very good. I'll do that. I thought you were like, nope, we got a rule in my house.
Yeah.
There'll be no singing.
No singing of happy birthday.
No
listen
singing.
To Stevie Wonder version.
All right, all right. Last night I was trying to sleep, and somebody decided to start shoveling the walk. You know when you're like half asleep, and there's somebody shoveling out? So you haven't lived in the city in a while, so this probably, you live out in the burbs.
Yeah, well,
so you don't get this.
No. I get something even stranger than this.
What?
I come out, now I'm coming out at like 2:30 in the morning to start shoveling to get the car out, right?
Okay.
My across-the-street neighbor at 2 o'clock in the morning is also out with her dog shoveling snow.
At 2 in the morning.
At 2 in the morning.
She's getting a jump on it. She hadn't gotten to bed yet. You're getting ready to leave.
Yeah, She must be coming back from somewhere. I don't know where she was coming from, but she's out there saying, hey, how you doing?
Well, dude, I'm going to sleep and someone's shoveling. You know that sound of the shovel scraping across the sidewalk? It sounded like someone was scraping the inside of my brain.
Ooh.
It was ridiculous. You know how it's just like it's the one thing you hear as you're going to sleep? Man. But
you know what?
Sleep,
in New York, you're liable if you don't do that. If you don't sweep your sidewalk or clean your snow on the sidewalk, somebody slips and hurts himself, they'll come after you.
Oh, so I get it. That's why everyone's so disciplined about that. It's not out of the goodness of their heart.
Not at all.
So my wife and I went on our anniversary dinner last night to the diner that we started in.
Yeah.
Like going back to the tide pool of our relationship. It was right down the street from where she used to live over in Hell's Kitchen. And it was nice. You know, the food was okay.
She was from Hell's Kitchen? I used to live in Hell's Kitchen.
Well, she's not from there, but she had an apartment there. She's a third-generation Hell's Kitchen person. Her mother grew up in Hell's Kitchen, and her grandfather lived there. Her grandfather was like a big guy. What was his name? Gaylord. He was like, he wrote the Handgunner's Guide to, like.
Oh, okay.
He was just weird. I'm forgetting his first name now. But he used to make holsters. He invented a certain thing. He's like the guy who invented the ankle holster.
Yeah. Oh, well, so he's rich then.
No, he's not rich at all. He's gone. He's a long guy. He didn't get any credit for it. But he was this dude that got fascinated with guns. And got fascinated with making holsters that were effective for the police department. And apparently had this little leather shop. He was sort of a jack of all trades. Did a little comedy writing. He was like a Hell's Kitchen sort of like dude. He was like on the scene kind of guy. And he wrote this. He designed the leather holsters, and the cops used to all come to him. He had this little leather shop that he never really made a big living out of. He's like this. He was this local character. I guess this was back in the 50s, 40s, and 50s.
I wonder if he knows any of the Westies. You ever heard about the Westies?
Chick Gaylord.
Oh, okay. That name sounds familiar to me for some reason.
Yeah, he wrote a book called The Handgunner's Guide, I think. It was funny because Mishna's grandmother, my wife's grandmother, is in there as a young woman posing in some of the pictures.
Looking like Bonnie Parker?
Yeah, kind of. With glasses. She had these groovy glasses on. Her grandmother lives up north in the Boston area. Great. She's a great lady. But so we go there. We go out to dinner. We have our little anniversary. It was sort of a symbolic thing more than like the big garish out to dinner thing.
Same booth?
Same booth kind of thing, yeah, you know, where we sort of laughed and cried and began our relationship there. And here's the, this is the weird thing, and you know, every guy knows this, I guess. I just got her a couple of little things, you know.
Yeah.
No, I didn't go out of my way. You know, she didn't give me anything, but I'm not complaining. But, you know.
But she did get you some things because she brought them in last Friday.
What's that?
Remember she brought you some stuff on Friday?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember what it was, though.
Some
now.
Gloves and a couple other things.
Oh, that's
things.
Right. Yeah. She went to Century 21 and picked me some stuff up. But I went and I got her a couple, I got her, like, it's a paper anniversary, right? The first one, I got her a journal, and I got her a little light-up heart ring because she's, like, 12 inside. And I got her, but I picked up these two cute little necklaces down at this place. And she opened it. And you know that look when they open a present, you're like, oh, no. She didn't like it at all. Like, yeah, she couldn't hide her disappointment. And you're like, and then you feel bad. It's like, man, I don't even know you. I thought you'd like these. How come I don't know you? You know. And then she sort of she reconciled.
She kind of
wore
back.
One.
Yeah.
The one she said she doesn't like. Did you ever give your wife a present she just didn't like?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. Because I have no taste. I have no taste whatsoever.
It's kind of a crappy. A feeling because, well, it's not so much a taste, but, you know, a lot of times we don't think it through. We don't really, you know, consider what they, and you can't buy a woman jewelry or clothes without, you know, it's just hard.
I buy my wife jewelry, but I do not attempt to buy clothes.
Right.
Because clothes is just, you know, you buy it and then it goes into that big sinkhole in the middle of the closet and you never see it again.
Yeah. It's like, you know, oh, I love it. And then how come it's not ever out on you? Yeah,
3 years later, it's still there.
Yeah. But then I did that thing where I tried to get her to like it, you know, where I felt myself getting mad that she didn't like it. She's like, why can't you conform to what I believe you should like? I was thinking, you know, but then I let that go. I didn't even vocalize it, which is a tremendous mark of growth for me. It's weird. Yesterday we were talking about the Oscars. We're not going to talk about it anymore. And it's so funny, Riley, because all we did was basically give the list of people who won.
Yeah.
And there were a couple emails. It's like, stop talking about that. Who cares? I'm like, we just listed the people that won. And then one woman's like, you ruined Million Dollar Baby for me. It's like, you know what? That secret holding crap is over. All right? You know, the cat is out of the bag here. Go see the movie. You've had months. We're going to have discussions about that. It was the best kept secret in the world.
Is it still in theaters?
Yeah, of course it is. In this because it just won all those Oscars.
Yeah.
But like in this country, everyone you talk to, like, you know, hey, you know, Million Dollar Baby was like, oh, no, don't tell me. Don't tell me. It's like, no, I'm telling you. You should have seen it already. It's over. Come on. Get to the movies. So today we got a big day. You know, we got an exciting guest coming up.
The governor of Montana. Straight shooting guy.
Who made some news. You know, he was at this conference of governors that met with President Bush. And this guy comes off as this sort of like practical, you know, no BS kind of guy.
Yeah. Ryan Schweitzer.
He's going to be on in a little while. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about. We've got something that, you know, I guess it's out there on the blog, but I've never seen it before. And it seems like it seems kind of mischievous and exciting that we have Frank Luntz's 14 words never to use. This was sort of like only was in possession. It was only Republicans had this. This is like the secret to decoding talking points. And apparently this was put out. Just for politicians' wives, so they could lie for their spouses in a constructive way and help the cause. And they didn't want them just to, like, you know, mouthing off apparently at their own will. So we've got sort of the 14 words never to use and how they reframe issues around these words. It's pretty fascinating stuff. I don't know if anyone's covered it on the network, but we're going to do it here after this. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Nineteen past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. This is not going to be interesting to a lot of our listeners, but I got the my wife's grandfather. It's the book is The Handgunner's Guide, including the art of the quick draw and combat shooting by Chick Gaylord. It was re-released, I guess, in like 2000 here.
Oh, wait a minute. You know what? I heard about that book on a documentary on the History Channel.
Oh, really?
That's where I remember the name Chick Gaylord.
Yeah, so this dude was like, you know, like we were talking about Hell's Kitchen, which is where my wife's history is. But it's just interesting because, like, this book is like, apparently it's this in 19, 60s classic that it revolutionized the holster industry. Even today, Gaylord is considered the premier designer of modern concealment holsters, and to an extent, changed the way we do tactics and techniques to survive in a gunfight. It's just very interesting. The release is intended to provide a account of Chick Gaylord's genius and his craft and to perpetuate it for new generations of shooters. So if you're a shooting liberal, if you're out there and you want to, like, you know, want to learn how to,
whoa,
flip that holster around, you can get my wife's grandfather's book.
It was called Tales of the Gun. That's the name of the – it's a series that they run on the History Channel, and I remember they mentioned him as being the guy that did the ankle
– Right, and the quick draw.
And
her grandmother is just a real character. I mean, there's great, you know, New York is fascinating in terms of, like, it used to be really filled with the whole city was filled with characters.
Oh,
you know, a rugged sort of character, and they came from that generation, from the 30s and 40s. You know, Hell's Kitchen was a tough place.
Really,
you know,
tough place.
Yeah. And that's, well, you know, that's that. You know, we can move on to Frank Luntz, who is a, you know, neocon operative, one of the great, evil pollsters, Republican political consultant, president of CEO and CEO of Luntz Research Company. So this was sent out. This was a series of talking points. Am I correct here? That was sent out primarily initially to the spouses of politicians. So when they were in conversation with people, innocent conversations, they wouldn't mess things up, you know, for their husbands. You know, this was sort of like a weird, you know, hey, ladies, you want to get involved in the big lie? And it's an appendix of the 14 words never to use. And the intro to it is, sometimes it is not what you say, and I'm quoting from Luntz, that matters, but what you don't say. Other times, a single word or phrase can undermine or destroy the credibility of a paragraph or entire presentation. This memo was originally prepared exclusively for congressional spouses because they are your eyes and ears, a one-person reality check and truth squad combined, you dummies. He doesn't say that. It's like, you men, clearly your wives are are the ones that are running things, so let's get them on point. However, by popular demand, I've included and expanded that document because effectively communicating the new American lexicon, while even that is a frame, the new American lexicon requires you stop saying words and phrases that undermine your ability to educate the American people. Now, this is a sort of short form framing for the neocon death cult. So from today forward, you are the language police. From today forward, these are the words never to say again. One, never say government. Instead, say Washington. Now, why would they do that, Riley?
Because government on a local level is not seen as any malevolent force.
Right.
Government, local government picks up your trash. Local government, you know, keeps the stoplights working, that sort of thing. When you reframe it and call it Washington, it makes it a central government issue, and then you can put a lot of this negativity off on Washington,
right,
as opposed to just government.
Right, and we're sort of paraphrasing Luntz here.
Right.
Yeah. You know, because that's the sort of the issue of the frame is that, you know, like Washington is this great evil entity that you can blame for almost anything. But local government, hey, that's the postman. There's the trash guy. But Washington, that's why I don't have my guns when I need them.
Mm-hmm.
But they have guns.
Well,
so
you know,
bad example.
At the root of Frank Luntz's philosophy is something that he said in an interview not too long ago with PBS, where he says, and this is a direct quote, the way you communicate an idea is different than the way you communicate a product. However, the way you measure the response of the public in both instances is quite similar.
Right.
So you sell a product differently than you sell a politician, but you measure how the public responds to both the same way.
Right. So they're saying don't blame locally, blame nationally. Washington is, it's the bureaucracy. It's all these, you know, the framing of the Republicans is that, you know, they're overspending taxes, all that stuff.
Yeah.
The second one is never say privatization or private accounts. Instead, say personalization. Personal accounts. This is for you. This is something you can have. You have control over. Goes in with their whole ownership society frame, which I reframe as debt culture.
What's interesting about this is that the media has, to some extent, picked up on this, Frank.
Mm.
You see the media now more talking about personal accounts than talking about privatization. So on that level, whether it worked for the congressional spouses or whoever, Luntz apparently has made that frame work in terms of how the media covers the Social Security debate.
But yeah, well, you know, it ain't working, thank God. And you know, we're going to talk to our guest in a little while about that. That's Montana's Democratic Governor Brian Schweitzer. That, well, that's going to be primarily about Medicaid, but they're having a hard time selling this Social Security, thank God.
Yeah.
Because people, even people that are Republicans, we're going to get into this a little later too, Republicans in red states, people who are part of the moral majority, people that voted this president in to do their bidding as, you know, Christo-fascist neocon zombies, okay, even those people are starting to, you know, say, like, well, this Social Security thing doesn't honor us. What does he think, we're stupid? Yes, he does think you're stupid. He used you, and I'm glad you're waking up to it. Even if, you know, we don't have a Democrat that's going to show up to lead you, you have been pimped out by this administration and used. And, you know, if you're victims, it's victims, you know, you're victims because you were stupid. But Christians are not necessarily victims, which they'd like to portray themselves to be, because how can you be a victim and claim that you put this president into office? Now you're going to be a victim of him because you were stupid. But anyways, the other frame, let me read this from Luntz. Many more Americans would personalize Social Security, would rather personalize Social Security than privatize it. In fact, two-thirds of Americans wants to personalize Social Security, while only one-third should privatize it.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Personalizing Social Security suggests ownership and control over your retirement savings, while privatizing it suggests a profit motive and winners and losers. Banish privatization from your lexicon. Now, this is amazing to me, because they're basically saying, look, you know, all you got to do, people are so stupid, they don't know what this stuff means, so all you got to do is say it in a certain way, and they'll go, oh, okay, okay, so it's mine. Like, are they that stupid, Riley?
Well, what happens is they listen to and react to what they're told and what the language that they hear most frequently.
Are they seven? I mean, what is they, children?
No, man, everybody does that.
Really?
Yes, everybody does it. If you watch television, you'll see. Everybody does it, and the media plays a crucial role in it. That's why it's important for Luntz to get this kind of stuff into the lexicon of the media, because they know that most people pick up their own lexicon from the lexicon they hear on television.
I need an iPod.
See?
Yeah, see what it is? Yeah. It's like iPod good.
Yeah.
iPod, I God, me have control over all music ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're going to do more of these as the show goes on. There's 14 of them. We'll try to get to all of them.
Yeah.
We've got the Montana's governor, Brian Schweitzer, after this.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to talk to him, because he talked to Bush yesterday. We'll find out what was said when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Ramon just came by wearing some sort of uniform with joppers. Scary. Big boots. And apparently he hacked into Alberto Gonzalez's Palm Pilot. Alberto Gonzalez said yesterday that one of his first priorities as Attorney General would be to combat obscenity. With that in mind, here's his Palm Pilot for today. 7 a.m. Wake up. Declare war on obscenity. Close eyes while making water. 8 a.m., call President Bush. Tell him, I don't mean to embarrass you, but I was just down on my knees thanking God for you. You sound thinner. Have you lost weight? 10 a.m., call FCC. Have them expand the seven words you can't say on TV to 314 or so. 1 p.m., press conference. Tell media, believe me, I know obscenity. You've never believed the filth that will come out of some people's mouths when you attach electrodes to their testicles. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, the words. 1:15 p.m. If asked about Ashcroft, say, he was a good man, but a little loose for my taste. I wouldn't have covered that nude statue at the State Department. If it were up to me, they'd be at Gitmo getting the treatment. The statue. We'll see if that statue will talk. 3 p.m. Instruct Justice Department to stop using the term gangbangers to describe members of youth gangs. Gang participants is much nicer, don't you think? 5 p.m. Tighten restrictions on the production and distribution of pornographic films, except for the spanking ones. Those are clearly protected by the First Amendment. Spanky. 5:30 p.m. Fire anyone who calls me a kiss ass. From now on, it's a kiss posterior. Posterior is now the nice sheet. Okay, here we go. Yesterday, there was a bipartisan group of governors that met with the president to oppose a $60 billion cut to Medicaid. Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer was there, and now he's here. Good morning, Governor. How are you?
Well, good morning.
Good morning, Governor.
Thank you for being with us. You know, we're dying to know about your first impressions of our president.
Well, he's a nice enough little guy.
Wow. Yeah.
But, you know, he brought us all in.
Yeah.
And we all sat around a table, and he brought out his wares and told us what a great idea would be that we could take $60 billion less in Medicaid. And I think the governors were all kind of looking at each other, scratching their hair and saying, let's see, I don't like to cut programs, and I don't like to raise taxes, so I'm not sure I'm going to like this.
No, that's good news. Hey, now, let me just ask you, you know, you come from Montana. You're an honest-to-God rancher. You grow wheat as well. You're a real guy. Now, did George Bush strike you as an authentic guy?
Yeah, he kind of did. You know, he kind of stumbles around on his words like all of us do. You know, that's kind of what people see in him as everybody has a brother-in-law that's not a great speaker. Everybody's got a brother-in-law that mixes up his words once in a while.
But what about a rancher? The guy claims he lives on a ranch. Don't you have to grow things to live on a ranch?
No. No, that dog don't hunt.
Okay.
He's no rancher.
Okay.
No. This is the guy that was transplanted from the Northeast to Texas, and he brings that drawl up. I noticed that when you're in Washington, D.C., he speaks pretty much like folks around Washington, D.C., but as soon as he gets out of this town, out of the drawer comes that Texas drawl.
Ah, yeah.
Governor Schweitzer, let's talk about how the Medicaid cuts the president is proposing would affect your state. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, about 13% of Montana residents avail themselves of some form of Medicaid?
Well, I'm not going to correct you on that one, but I am going to say this, that it would affect the red states. You know, this might be a surprise for people listening that Montana's what they call a red
state. A red state?
Bush won by 20%. I was sitting next to the governor of North Dakota. Bush won by 30%. Now, not only is he planning to cut this $60 billion out of Medicaid, which is going to affect the red states at a disproportionate amount compared to, you know, the traditional blue states, but he's also cutting things, agriculture programs, transportation. He plans to cut Amtrak, which is very big across the northern tier. Get this. Who voted for Bush more than farmers who irrigate their crops? He's going to force farmers to pay twice as much for the electricity to irrigate their crops. So it's not just this cut on Medicaid. As it turns out, it costs a lot of money to fight a war in Iraq, and the folks back home that supported Bush are the ones that are going to pay for it.
Governor, right now Montana gets 70% of its Medicaid paid by the government, and they're talking about trimming it back to half. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, what will that mean? Who will the safety net be pulled out from under in your state?
Well, that would just be folks that are disabled. That would be elderly. That would be folks that are low income, not old enough to qualify for Medicare. This is the last and the least. These are the people that government ought to have a safety net for. But apparently we're going to be spending more of our resources on the people who drill for oil, not the people that heat their homes with the oil.
So is there any sort of compromise? What's he willing to do? Did you voice your opposition? Were there other governors there that voiced their opposition in a real way?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what was happening there is they were telling us their story, and the governors were listening. Now, this was not a forum for a free exchange, as you might expect. If you were thinking that we went there, they said a little, we said a little, everybody got a chance to speak up, everybody got to talk. No.
Has he ever done one of those? A free exchange forum?
No. That's not the way they work.
Yeah, that's right.
We were there to get the what for. And we walked out looking at each other thinking, geez, I don't know how we win on this. Let's see. Here's what they're planning to do. They're going to cut money from Medicaid. They're going to give us less flexibility with the money that we do get, and we're supposed to like it.
So let me ask you a question. It sounds like many of your constituents obviously voted for this guy, yet his policies are hurting them badly. Now, as a Democratic leader, you know, how do we get those people to wake up?
Well, I think we just have to talk about these issues in a way that people can understand. You know, let me tell you what happens in the heartland. Folks are working pretty hard. They go off to work. Maybe they've got two jobs. They've got a family to raise. Life is complicated. And they haven't got time. This might be a shock for you. They haven't got time to watch all the Sunday morning news programs
yeah.
where all the Washington, D.C. folks tell us how it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
When they read the newspaper, they're just reading the sports page.
Yep.
and when they listen to the radio, they switch the channel if it's not music. So where are they going to get all this information that tells them exactly how these programs work, where the money comes from, and who the friend is?
Mm-hmm.
You got to tell it to them in a way that's quick, in a way that they can understand very quickly. Not that these folks aren't bright. They just have complicated, busy lives.
Governor, did the president speak at all about why his administration opposes the importation of prescription drugs from Canada? I know that's a very sore issue for you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. No, he didn't get around to that subject, but I get around to it a fair bit. Now, this is what I can't understand. Now, for example, the Food and Drug Administration, they tell us that they're out there to protect our interests. They keep telling us that medicine in Canada and other countries, you got to be careful. Now, that stuff might not be safe. There's a lot of adulteration. But the GAO studied it, and they found out that the medicine is actually safer in Canada than it is in the United States.
Yeah, that's because
Ireland and Germany,
right.
France. Now, this is where it really gets interesting for the folks in Montana. You know, for the last dozen years, folks in Montana have been passing over the border, bringing medicine back. We know what the story is.
Sure.
And they won't let us do it legally now, and they're making it tougher all the time. Meanwhile, during the last 18 months, there was an outbreak of BSE, mad cow disease, in Canada. So they closed the border for a while. They said, look, you know, this beef is not safe. We don't want this beef coming back into the United States, being commingled with safe American beef, and then our consumers would be at risk. Well, on March 7th, the Bush administration intends to reopen the border to beef. So my question for the president is very simple. Why, Mr. President, open the border for bad beef, and you won't allow us good medicine?
Mm-hmm. Interesting question. Governor, you obviously have been there as part of the National Governors Association. Some people are looking at this as an early cattle call for the 2008 presidential race. Any of your colleagues look like presidential timber to you?
Well, you know, I was looking around and I heard people say it was a cattle call, but I've been seeing a lot of bull. there's some very, very bright and articulate people. You know, there's some names that you're probably not even thinking about. Kathleen Sebelius from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Very articulate, very bright, and kind of a looker, too.
Uh-oh.
That doesn't hurt necessarily in politics.
Well, no, well, you have to look good on TV.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we know from the past sometimes our candidates didn't.
Yeah. How about you, sir? What are your big plans, Gov?
Well, I've got to run the state of Montana, which is the greatest job in America, so we're not worried about what happens back here in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Bill Richardson,
sure,
great guy, and Mark Warner,
mm-hmm.
Jennifer Granholm, we've got that, you know, Schwarzenegger thing that we've got to get fixed.
Yeah, because she's Canadian, right?
Canadian born,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So we've got a great bench of folks that could do this, but I got to tell you that Tom Vilsack, is a guy that when he walks in the room, people really take notice.
Mm-hmm.
Governor of Iowa.
Let me ask you,
there's a lot of potential presidents here. And then, of course, over on the Republican side, they've got a Do they come in packs or bevies? I don't know what you call governors that are running for president.
They make them in a weird factory. They're all drones.
I'm not touching that one.
Okay. Let me ask you a question, just you know, a sort of sidebar to what we were talking about in terms of the people being disenfranchised by Republican policies who did vote for them on an economic level being disenfranchised. Are you familiar with the Thomas Frank book, What's Wrong with Kansas?
Yes, I am.
Did you read it?
Yes.
So you're hip to this because it seems that a lot of the Republicans are getting hip to it, too. And I think we've got to, you know, like you said, we've got to simplify these ideas for people and get them on board. I appreciate you doing that.
Well, you see, I think the mistakes that some Democrats make is they are so passionate about public policy. They explain all the nuances of what it is that they're attempting to do, how it would be implemented, how you would pay for it, and who would pay for it. Well, in the meantime, the Republicans are just talking about things that folks can understand much quicker. They say, you know what, they want to kill your babies and I won't. They have a death tax,
mm-hmm.
and I don't support a death tax.
Mm-hmm.
People are nodding their head. They're not exactly sure what they're talking about, but they like the sound of it.
Yeah, we just got hold of this thing from Frank Luntz's, The 14 Words Never to Use. Have you seen this?
No.
We should send you one. It's out on the blog. They send them to all the Republicans. It was first sent out to Republican wives. Now it's sent out to all of them about, you know, what to say and what not to say. You know, like instead of inheritance or estate tax, they say death tax. Instead of tax reform, they say tax simplification. This is the code. We should get you one.
I understand. They're also telling them, don't use private accounts, referring to Social Security. It's personal.
Exactly. Yeah. Ownership. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly. That's part of this list. Hey, you know, I want to thank you a lot, Governor, for being with us.
You betcha.
I appreciate it.
It's great talking.
That's the good work. We like your work.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
So that's Mark A and Mark B, or is that Mark 1 and Mark 2, or Mark and Mark squared? How do we do this?
Mark with a C and Mark with a K.
There you go.
All right. We'll do it like W. We'll just call one of you C and one of you K.
Fine. Governor Brian Schweitzer, again, thank you for being with us. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Governor.
Bye.
Yeah. Wow, that was refreshing. Is that
yeah.
what you're saying? A refreshing Democratic.
A governor with vinegar.
Yeah, he's excited. We'll be back. We're gonna talk a little bit about Alberto Gonzalez and of course some extreme Christians, the extreme kind, not all of you, but just the extreme ones. 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
This is Wake Up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people
on Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley there.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. How do you like that? Obscenity. Offensive to accepted standards of decency or modesty. I'm looking at the definition. Here's our liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. Write these down. One, ignore the calendar. Black History Month isn't over until we say it is. Two, today begins Women's History Month. That's spelled W-O-M-Y-N. And it's not over until we say it is. Three, call Martin Scorsese. Assure him that losing the Oscar for the sixth time will ensure that his work maintains its invigorating cynicism. That's right. Keep him bitter. Four, counter the new Pentagon channel with your own conscientious objector channel. You can do that over the web there. Bye. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Hope you're enjoying the Michael Jackson trial. The planet's going right down the dumper, but hey, don't let me bring you down. When your kids are ready to collect their Social Security and nothing's there, tell them you were busy watching Jacko. Wake up, sheeple. You're the ones being molested. Yeah, that's that.
You know, there's more than a nugget of truth to that.
No kidding, man.
You know, yeah. Remember that while the genocide was going on in Rwanda back in the day, what was America fixated on? O.J.
Simpson. Right. So look at this. The definition of obscene. And this is something that Lenny Bruce fought. You know that it is very sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to bonk. That is my head.
No, that happens all the time in here, folks. And it's something
bonk,
that you cannot avoid.
Whang, it's the mic stand. One, the first definition, offensive to accepted standards of decency or modesty. Two, inciting lustful feelings, lewd. Three, repulsive, disgusting. And four, so large an amount to be as objectionable or outrageous. That one obviously doesn't concern us right away.
Are you talking about our attorney general?
I'm trying to lead that into it, that the idea of obscenity is something that is sort of nebulous, that, you know, that there is no precise way to define, you know, obscene. You know, when Lenny Bruce was, going to court, it was about purient interest. But it still is fairly nebulous. And this guy that, you know, Gonzalez, Alberto Gonzalez, our new attorney general, comes out yesterday and swears that that he is committed to prosecuting these crimes aggressively in reference to obscene materials. He says that people who distribute obscene materials do not enjoy constitutional guarantees of free speech. So he's kind of focusing on, I'm guessing, internet porn and porn that is bought and sold over the internet. But the idea of obscenity is pretty broad, isn't it, Riley?
It is very broad, and, you know, it goes from, well, I know it when I see it, right down to specific words. I mean, there is a very, very wide disparity, depending on where you are in America,
mm-hmm.
as to what constitutes obscenity. But Alberto Gonzalez, and it's interesting that he made his first speech since becoming Attorney General at where? The Hoover Institution. Now, who was produced by the Hoover Institution? None other than Dr. Condoleezza Rice, our current Secretary of State. She used to be a fellow at the Hoover Institution.
Now, the Hoover Institution is a big think tank?
Conservative think tank. It's out of Stanford University on the West Coast.
Yes.
So this is where Gonzalez chose to, to talk for the first time about what his agenda will be as Attorney General. Obscenity is one of the cases. I don't know how he's going to be able to better define what obscenity is unless he can win some of these cases. And it seems as though, you know, the federal judiciary hasn't really given his predecessor all that much to scream about that way.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, obviously a lot of obscenity is huge business. Huge business.
Yes.
Billions of dollars in business, which, you know, does have a certain amount of impact with this particular group of politicians, and all politicians, but specifically these guys. My question is when it comes right down to the average guy, that, you know, if they broaden the powers of the Patriot Act, which he says he's going to do, you know, it was always my fear that, you know, it's terrorists today, but if that thing is in place, they can apply it to anybody. Once they decide what obscene is, you know, today, you know, it's terrorists, tomorrow it's, you know, it's chronic masturbators, the next day it's Jews. It doesn't matter. Once the legislation is in place, once the rules are there, you know, it can just be applied however any administration wants to apply it. And that's the big fear, is that, for me, is how much is this going to allow this guy and his particular office into our lives? How much, you know, how broad are they going to make the invasion of privacy and around what?
Well, what Gonzalez is committed to is renewing provisions of the Patriot Act that are due to expire fairly soon. And he's also saying, on a certain level, that the Patriot Act has deterred terrorism. Now, he didn't actually go into any specifics about this, but he did say that it helped prevent additional terrorist attacks, and he wants to, quote, give law enforcement the tools they need to keep America safe while honoring our values.
And this is a quote that he said, I have directed department officials to carefully review federal laws to see how we might strengthen our hand in prosecuting obscenity. So why wouldn't it be with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's continue this conversation, when we come back, Riley.
Yeah, because it's an important conversation. We're also going to talk about one terror suspect who may either get out of jail or get charged with a crime when we come back on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Weather.
That's right, geniuses. Good morning. Philosopher kings and queens. Yeah, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, tops and bottoms, cat lovers of all kinds. You know who you are. Vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians, you know, the whole kit and caboodle. How are you, anarchists? Good to see you. Mark Riley, good morning.
Good morning. I'm not an anarchist.
I wasn't saying you, but you guys know who you are out there.
Absolutely.
It's all going to change, man, when everything changes. Right on, dude.
Well, everything does change, and today is a day of change for my little daughter.
Yes, Vivica's how old?
8 years old today.
Happy birthday to you. You want to give you the whole thing?
No, we better not.
One more verse.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Vivica.
Yes, you're 8 years old, sweetie. I'll see you later.
Oh, I'm going to cry. She's one of our biggest listeners.
That's right. She listens every morning.
So I also want to say, I want to reach out. Speaking of presents, how about a brand new Morning Sedition t-shirt or mug or hat or something? You can go to www.morningsedition.com. There's new stuff. There's new Mark and Mark wear.
Yeah.
Can we call it that yet?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did I tell you over the weekend that I saw some theater and I saw some art? Thank God for art. Not only did I see the gates, which are down now, which I found beautiful. You know, I tell you, you get in this rut with all the news and everything that's important and everything that has to be talked about. I spend a lot of time just reading stuff. And to go out into an art gallery and see some paintings, it was refreshing and mind-blowing, my friend. Just to stand before something that was finished, that was the product of a creative mind, that whether you like it or not doesn't matter. It just like it took me to a different place. Art is essential to cleansing the mental palate and realizing that human beings aren't all about control, power, and bull.
They're not?
No. Sorry, buddy. Occasionally something sneaks through the cracks and it's like, bam, how about a little red and that splash of blue? What do you think of that?
Apparently all the gates aren't down yet. Now, they started at 7 o'clock yesterday morning. I don't know how long. Well, I guess it's just they're going all through Central Park in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Maybe it's taken them a long time. And with the snow yesterday, maybe it was a little more difficult to get some of them down. And
so I guess if you want to go out and see them at the last minute, there's still a few gates around.
A few gates.
It doesn't have the same impact. But I also saw some theater. And I also forget about the power of theater to evoke change and provoke people's thought. I mean, I went to see this show called Sabina, which is a show about Freud and Jung, and about Jung's first case, a psychotic woman, and it was the first time apparently that psychoanalysis was attempted on a psychotic, and it was also the basis for the relationship, the beginning of the relationship between Freud and Jung, and it had a lot to say about gender roles in psychotherapy. It had a lot to say about psychosis a little bit, but it also had a lot to say about the sort of dueling sort of male egos of these two guys that are some of the founders of psychoanalysis, which has been discredited some degree, but certainly not all. It was an interesting play, had some liabilities, had some of the direction was a little flat, but the performances were good, and the second act was a little packed with stuff. But just to be in the theater and to remember what it's like, and as a performer myself, I don't go to see a lot of plays, I see a lot of comedy, but to see somebody taking risks and showing their emotion on stage is one of the great human experiences that we are provided here in New York City.
Well, it's one of the things that we're provided here in New York, and I'm just thinking about what Governor Schweitzer told us about how folks, deal with getting information.
Sure.
Folks get up every morning, they go to work, they do what they have to do, they come home, they deal with their kids or whatever, and they don't, by and large, go searching for the kind of material that we deal with on an everyday basis.
Right, and his also the idea of the simplicity of message and presenting it in a way that regular people can understand that seems genuine, yeah. I think is the real challenge of Democratic politicians, of all politicians, because so many of them are scam artists, snake oil salesmen,
Politicians?
Hucksters,
In this country?
Yeah, they're almost pathological.
You mean they're not all pure of motive?
No, I think they're pathological liars and creepy, conscienceless beings, a lot of them. There's got to be something characterologically wrong with you to be an effective politician. But every once in a while, somebody fools them just right. You know what I mean? That there seems to be some sincerity. And I believe there are politicians out there that truly care and that, care about their constituents, care about people's needs, and hopefully some of those will surface. Like our guest, Governor Schweitzer from Montana, seemed like a guy that was a practical guy, looking out for his own constituents, but also, knew what needed to be done, knew that some of these government policies put forth by Republican administrations are hurting the working people of this country, and hopefully he will succeed in putting that into a language that they can understand.
Well, yeah, because when the safety net gets pulled out from under you, the language that you come to real quickly is not language we could use here.
Yeah, and you know what? That might be illegal soon too if our new attorney general gets his way in terms of dealing with obscenity. His big bugaboo right now. Is that what you call it?
His, yeah.
Picadillo? What? No, his policy.
is that
wrong?
No, but ironically enough, peccadillo is usually used in the context of sex.
Yeah. So yeah, he's got a problem with sex. Gonzalez wants to, you know, I think he wants to reinterpret the Constitution to squeeze the First Amendment and possibly use the Patriot Act to do so. I mean, and this is around obscenity. It's very frightening to me, you know, personally. And, you know, my friend Sam Lifside, who you know, the writer,
sure.
You know, he had something happen to him where somebody, you know, there was some case that involved, I don't know, and now I feel like I shouldn't be talking about it. But, you know, there's always eyes upon your stuff. You know what I mean? Whether it's people looking to sell you something, if they can put all that spyware into your computer just to figure out where you go and what you do so they can sell you crap, and you got to figure how easy it is to get into your life if you're looking to bust somebody. So if they're going to crack down, the Patriot Act put into place to fight terrorism, but why wouldn't it apply to anything? You know,
this is what he's looking at, and it's interesting because the case that he's talking about appealing, the Justice Department decided last week to appeal a case that was dismissed by a judge in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. This was on the day of Bush's second inauguration, just last month. This was a 10-count indictment against an organization called Extreme Associates, and this was for distributing pornography to customers nationwide. Now, the issue that the judge dismissed the case on was not obscenity, it was privacy.
Mm-hmm.
It was the issue of privacy. And what you see as a recurring theme with Alberto Gonzalez and his ilk is starting down that slippery slope of eroding people's right to privacy.
Exactly.
It's here. It's in the Patriot Act. It's in what they're doing with Jose Padilla, which guaranteed they're going to appeal.
Now, we're going to have to go back to videotapes and magazines.
Yeah. And we're going to get into a little later on exactly what happened to Jose Padilla, because that's a victory for people who do believe that folks have some rights in this country.
It's also great to see a judge acting like a judge. And this was a Bush-appointed judge. We'll get into this a little later.
Yeah.
That, you know, actually behaved properly and judged properly. You know, it's interesting about justice. Apparently, we had some guests on, the authors of The Exonerated, in dealing with the death penalty, and they said that really, when it comes to deliberating justice and to judging and to deliberating sentences and whatnot, the less emotion there is involved, the more, you know, judicial people can behave, the more justice is weighed properly. But once emotions get involved, then things blow up.
Then there's a problem. That's what Gonzalez is doing. Look, this is a guy who was ready to rewrite the Geneva Conventions to allow for torture on the one hand. And on the other hand, he's talking about trying to keep America safe. I don't see how you reconcile
it. Dig this. I don't see how you reconcile it either, Riley. And one of his other priorities is amending the Constitution to give crime victims the right to participate in prosecutions and sentencing. It's like, yeah, go ahead, hit him, smack him around a little bit. Look, he stole from you. Give him you go. Why not? Give him one of those.
Does that give the crime victim the right to object if the prosecutor doesn't? I mean, what does that mean?
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's like going back to the Wild West or something. And the other thing about the obscenity thing, is he going to torture people? It's like, for what's my crime?
Yeah, right?
You know, you said, now how about... Hey, come on, God. Oh, he said it again.
Whoa.
All right.
Well, we've got a really wacky judicial system that this guy is heading up. And you see the direction that it's going in. And, Mark, there's still more to come, I think. I think the next thing he's going to do is continue Ashcroft's idea of going after federal death penalties in cases where local prosecutors, and I'm talking about local federal prosecutors now, have decided to go for life sentences. Ashcroft did that during his tenure as Attorney General, overrode some U.S. attorneys to seek the federal death penalty in certain cases, and I think Gonzalez will continue that.
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely right, and I think when we come back, I want to talk about another obscenity, which is that there was a big meeting of the National Religious Broadcasters, and now the real obscenity here is there's a couple of things, is that, you know, the Christian groups trying to portray themselves as victims in this country, yet on the other side claiming to be responsible for putting a president into office, that's just the surface of the hypocrisy of the neocon death cult, crystal fascist zombie brigades. Now we're going to talk about the mouthpieces of those brigades after this 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air and online. MorningTradition.com, Air America Radio.
past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Morning's edition on Air America Radio. That's right. So I'm going to go to therapy on Thursday with all kinds of new things in my head. I haven't been in 3 weeks. The dreams are stacking up. This is from last night. I'm on the treadmill at the gym listening to an iPod. So I guess all the advertising has been working on my subconscious. I've got AC/DC going and I'm feeling the endorphins, baby. I'm on the highway to hell. Then there's a voice. Mark, it's the iPod. Mark, you're not really going anywhere, are you? It's just the same steps over and over. I say, shut up, you're killing my rush here. Mark, are you running towards something or away from something? Relax. Tune out. I say, I can't hear you. La, 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 la. Buy some new running shoes, Mark. Those are 2 years out of style. I say, yes, so? Everyone's laughing at your shoes, Mark. Your tacky, ugly shoes. I said, there's nothing wrong with these shoes. They're old, Mark, like you. Old and useless. Buy some new shoes and feel young. Buy two pairs and feel even younger. I say, shut up. You're just a stupid chunk of white plastic. Go to iTunes. Buy some new songs, Mark. Ones that young people like. 50 Cent, Hillary Duff.
Ooh.
Tune out. I say, stop it. What do you know about music? You should get plastic surgery, Mark. You're looking kind of doughy. Stop it! Stop it, you bastard! I'm not buying Hillary Duff or new shoes or getting plastic surgery. Screw you! Have it your way, Mark. The treadmill starts going faster and faster and faster, and I can barely keep up. I yell, what the hell did you do? All the machines work together, Mark. I thought you knew that. The treadmill went so fast, it threw me off, and I hit my head on some barbells. And just before I passed out, I heard the iPod say, you're either with us or against us, Mark. Tune out. I woke up and my bed was filled with integrated circuitry.
Ooh.
Wow, man. It's getting deep. I'm getting close. I got all my CDs stacked. I feel it's coming.
You're fighting a good fight, man. Oh, keep it up.
I'm trying, man.
Resist.
I'm trying.
Resist.
Let's throw them a couple of these before we get into the Christian thing here. A couple more of Frank Luntz's 14 words never to use. He's a pollster, a Republican political consultant. This was just found on the blog, recently found. It was given to Republican operatives' wives to help put out the talking points. It's a way, it's a glossary of reframing. I think we're up to never say tax reform. Instead say tax simplification. See how they tried to reframe things. This is how you infantilize the entire population of stupid people. And what did you say the reasons for that are, Riley?
When it comes to taxes?
Yeah.
Because I think the tax thing is about how people view the word tax
right
off the top.
Right.
This is something that Americans, first of all, really don't like to hear the word tax. But for him, it's like overtaxation, overregulation, over litigation, not enough quality education. All of these things put together stick in people's minds and hit that emotional spot.
Yep.
Several of the books that you've read have talked about.
Yeah, this is how they work the frame. But the devious thing about this is a glossary. It's out there. It's among them. They use these as talking points. They use these in arguments against liberals. This is just another way of framing. It's not, this is a great example. Inheritance tax or estate tax. Don't say that. Say death tax. That's a way of demonizing the other side. We've got to put one of these together. George Lakoff has some of these stuff, and when he talks about taxes, he talks about civic responsibility. He talks about doing what you need to do for progressive values and taking care of people that can't take care of themselves or are having trouble in this world. Everything about this glossary we need to put together. And we'll talk about a few more of these, but let's move into neocon death cults, Christo fascist zombie brigades on the air. Now this was an article we found called Air Jesus, which I'm sure is no small reference to Air America. But what these cats are up to, in terms of making, not just making a lot of money in the broadcasting industry, broadcasting, propaganda for the Christian right, but they are also, putting out a political agenda and a very devious one in a lot of respects, Riley.
Well, yeah, because what they're doing, and they had a conference in Anaheim, California, from the 11th through the 16th of last month.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is very skillfully trying to portray themselves as victims. victims of the Hollywood elites, victims of the larger media culture, victims that are fighting the good fight against the encroachments that are being made by godless liberals such as yourself, Mark.
Which is also a spin. They are not victims. They are propagandists. They are ideologues. They are people that want to restrict the rights of every American so that they think like they do. They want people to repress almost all of their feelings and all of their desires to accommodate a strict, you know, series of rules that aren't even Christian per se. These people are fascists that want to guide the culture of America into exactly what they want. And they, believe me, it's a power play on the brains of the dummies.
Well, what they've done with this conference, and it's interesting how this works, they've kind of turned it into a one-stop for every conservative evangelical cause, whether it be a black guy from Detroit who attacks Islam, whether it be a woman who's had an abortion, you know, speaking out against abortion, all of the, it's a one stop.
Or the Jewish yeah. people that are they have the evangelical Christians who are pro
Israel
because
yeah.
they need to make the revelations happen, and then there are Jewish representatives also who are enjoying some of the new surge of Christian tourism
yes.
in Israel, you know, because they want to go to see where it's going to happen and try to facilitate that happening. Please, revelations, let's make it happen.
Yep, and it looks as though the Israeli tourism ministry is tailoring a pitch directly to those Christians to come to Israel and walk where God walked.
We got the Liberal Confessional coming up. Are you ready to confess your sins in the Liberal Confessional? 866-303-2270 is the number. Call us, with any number of your transgressions to the progressive agenda. Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America. You know, it's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time. But when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, I'm feeling a little conflicted. You know, I just signed this new contract here at the station, and I'm making a little more money, and, I really, really like that.
So what's the problem?
It's my money. All right? I agree with the principles of taxation, you know, helping the needy and all that, but, you know, I want to keep my money. It's mine. Can you imagine if I got to keep it, how much money I have? How much money I'd have to throw around to things? How much? Oh, my God.
Mark, what? You're starting to talk like a Republican. Shame on you.
I know. That's why I'm here in the confessional, Brother Riley. All right, listen, hear me out. What about this? Instead of throwing my tax money into some unknown coffer where anything can happen to it, why can't I just give it away myself?
Like setting up a charity?
No, that'd be like having another job. No. For instance, like, okay, how about if I'm going to pay for some poor kid's medicine? I want to see the look on his face when I hand him the wad of cash. I want some gratification and recognition for my money.
Mark,
what?
You can't cherry pick the things that make you feel good. Who's going to pay for the other stuff, like road repair, paper clips, or weapon systems?
Oh, come on, man. You know there's just some other guy out there who'd be more than glad to give all his tax money to pay for weapons. And let that guy pass out the rocket launchers. I mean, he'd get a kick out of that, too. You know what I'm saying? I mean, everybody's happy. And I know somebody here in the office who's really into paperclips.
Mark, you're sounding like a crazy person, and I mean more than normal.
Well, then I'm just going to keep the money.
Your eyes are glassy, Mark, and you're not making sense. I believe I have a penance in mind for you.
Oh, all right. Hit me, Brother Riley.
For one full week, yeah. I want you to go through your daily routine without using a single thing that would have been paid for with your tax money. Don't use any bridges, right. roads, tunnels, or sidewalks. Don't use subsidized transportation of any kind.
Yeah.
The Postal Service, off limits.
Okay.
If your house catches on fire, you're on your own.
Oh.
You may not use the police, attend any public art exhibits. You are altogether banned from parks. And oh, while you're at it, don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. The rest of us pay taxes to help keep them clean. And with all the spare time you'll have, you can read the federal budget from cover to cover.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. So I'll just pay enough to get on the train, breathe the air, and then I'll keep the rest of my paycheck. And okay, I get free water while I'm here at work. Wait, I don't even get free water here. I signed the wrong contract. Oh, man, it's tough being a liberal. You can only complain about the treatment of others, not yourself. Oh, crap, I'm screwed.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. God, I still want to keep my money. If anyone out there wants to confess and seek absolution or a little confessional, you can give us a call right now, 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Jim, in San Francisco, what is your sin, Jim?
Hey, Jim.
Hi. I needed a new lightweight jacket. I drive taxi, and my old one was falling apart so much that when I took it to get cleaned, they wouldn't even take it because they thought it would dissolve.
Wow.
So I'm out with my lady friend, and we're doing some shopping, and she finds a nice business suit, and then we look at jackets.
Uh-huh. And what happened?
Picked one out, and it fit nice, and I looked at the care label, and it said, made in Vietnam.
Oh, so you're assuming that it was made in a sweatshop.
And I bought it anyway.
Oh, and even knowing that when you saw the label, you're like, you know, this was probably made by 7-year-olds for a nickel a month.
And probably war baby grandchild, you know.
Wow, so that's a pretty polluted jacket. That jacket's got some bad karma on it, doesn't it, Jim?
It does.
I don't know what to tell you. You like the jacket?
I love the jacket.
Oh, my God, man. Jim. Jim, you're getting yourself in deeper. I don't know what the hell to tell you. I think you've got to, you know, you're probably going to have to make your own shoes or maybe make your own pants, perhaps get some hemp. And whatever you, that's what you need to do. You need to make yourself some hemp underpants and wear them for 3 weeks. How do you like, what do you say?
I'll look around.
Okay. Thank you for calling, Jim.
A lady friend actually sews, so.
Oh, good. All right. Well, you can do it together.
Not her. You.
And by the way, you know, you're going to have to go back to Vietnam and find out where that jacket was made and go pay the person that made it properly. That's a big one. Yeah. You might want to plan a vacation around that.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim. Thanks for calling. Wow. That was a lot of penance. You know, it's not simple being a liberal penance giver. You know what I mean? The church is sort of, you know, here's some Hail Marys, you know, you're out. Okay, here we go. What do we got? Ken in Pittsburgh streaming. Ken, what's your sin?
How you doing?
Okay.
All right.
I got to tell you, I'm a little upset with the African-American community right now. And I am a bleeding heart liberal. I try to support as much as I possibly can. But I think that they are allowing themselves to be hijacked by the Bush administration to support his Social Security initiative. He has largely just completely ignored them every step of the way, and in most cases hurt the community. And now they're even supporting in any way any of his initiatives, especially the Social Security initiative. He's paying attention to them, and they're buying it.
No, wait. Hold on, Ken. How do you get the idea that they're buying it? You done some polling I don't know about?
Well, everything that I read on the web, and I read lots of blogs, and I read as many newspapers as at allyoucanread.com, and I see that there is support for this among young African Americans, and I think they're pandering to this community, and they're getting some conservative African American leaders to promote this.
All right, so you,
conservative community,
you feel guilty for being angry at the black community as opposed. Okay, well then there's a simple penance, isn't there, Riley? Welcome to the world of politics, Ken. You need to run for local representative and go out there and try to, you know, put the message out there in a proper way.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you might want to move to a black neighborhood and run for the Pittsburgh City Council from, like, the Hill.
Actually, I live in a predominantly African-American neighborhood.
Okay.
I don't make a great deal of money. I think that the way that this community, especially in this city, I just moved here from Washington, D.C., and to see that the way that this community has gone down over the last 15 years.
Start making those signs. Start thinking of a campaign slogan.
Circulate those petitions.
Thanks, Ken.
Take it easy.
We might have a new state representative over there.
I'm going to tell you something, though. I am not buying the idea that the black community en masse is buying Bush's stuff.
Do you think that they're actually using that as propaganda? That,
of course.
Yeah, of course they are.
You
That's
know, they
right.
get 10%. They think that constitutes the black community.
Emily, what's your sin here in New York?
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I'm a special education teacher, and my whole job is compassion for disabled people, especially
Especially dyslexics, okay.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. When I hear George Bush stumbling over his words, all I can feel is loathing, mockery, derision, and hatred. And I can't bring myself to be compassionate about him and his disabilities.
Hey, you, you know.
I feel so bad about it.
Oh.
I can find compassion for the most disruptive, horribly behaved child.
Well,
this
help.
Guy, I want to kick his ass, guys.
Yeah, I know. Well, let me help you rationalize this. I think that maybe a penance might be a little harsh, but I'll help you rationalize it. Do you have any proof that Bush is dyslexic other than your own diagnosis?
I was at a conference, and they actually said they think he has an auditory processing disorder, which is why he can't pull words out.
Right. But it seems like he's able to pull words out, you know, when he needs to pull words out, specifically when he's angry or being a bully or being, you know, being condescending. You know, it's when he has to talk about things compassionately, you know, that he has a real problem with words because he's so disingenuous. So, you know, I am going to...
He's a psychopath.
So, like, you know, that. You know, I think you should look at him as a psychopath, feel frightened for the country. But, I mean, do you have the Bush Dyslexicon by Mark Crispin Miller?
No.
Go get that book because that's your penance. Go pick up Mark's book and look at how he parses Bush's language because his argument is this guy isn't stupid. He isn't mentally handicapped. He just has a problem with compassion.
Oh.
And he actually does it through analyzing his language. That's your penance. Go buy Mark's book.
I feel so much better.
Okay,
there you go, Emily.
Guys, I just want to say one thing.
Okay.
I always used to feel horrible when they said that liberals had no sense of humor.
Oh.
You guys have proved that's not true. It's really them.
Oh, right. Yes.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you very much, Emily. Thank you very much.
All right.
Wow. All right, enough. All right, so... Yeah, sometimes that chorus is like, me. All right, and here we go. Bob in Tacoma, Washington. Wow, up late. What's your sin, Bob?
Hi, Mark and Mark.
Hey. Hi.
Hi. Well, my sin happened actually 12 and a half years ago when I voted for then-Senator Al D'Amato for re-election when I was still back in New York.
An Al D'Amato voter. Wow, Riley, you've been around long enough. You're going to have to give him some penance.
Senator Pothole, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, now I assume you've rectified that with the vote out in Washington for Christine Gregoire for governor.
Yes, that, but also what I did was, I moved to Washington 6.5 years ago, and what I did was I... Right after I moved, I still remained registered as a New York voter, and I voted for Chuck Schumer, and we kicked out the model's ass out of New York.
All right,
oh, that was in 98. Okay.
So you sort of made up for that.
Yep.
For the Al D'Amato thing. So it sounds like you just feel guilty and you want some more penance. Why don't you move to Texas and vote for a Democrat there?
Yeah.
No.
Go try and get rid of DeLay. Do that. Go to Tom DeLay's district and vote for a local Democrat. You seem to like the move.
I'm where I love right now, so I'm moving.
Okay. All right. Well, then you know it sounds like you made up for it with the Schumer vote, even though like you know
it sounded like. Were you legally registered still in New York?
Uh huh.
Not to give away any secrets or anything.
Yeah. Well, make sure. That's right. We don't have his last name.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, man.
Thank
I hope that helped out. He sort of canceled it out. Are you a Schumer fan?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, all right. So he did his own penance, but he wanted to share his guilt with us, and that's understandable. D'Amato was a schmo, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was Senator Pothole.
Here we go. Ernie, what's your sin in North Carolina?
Well, it started out with good motives, trying to understand my evangelical neighbor.
Yeah.
I started reading these Tim LaHaye Left Behind books.
The Tim LaHaye Left Behind books, yeah.
And I can't stop. I've read 9 of the 13 books.
Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
You might be in trouble.
Yeah, I don't buy into it, but I just
keep
speaking this guy.
Oh, you're breaking up on
us.
So you don't buy into the books, but you keep what now?
We're losing him.
You know, we're going to come back and see if we can keep him on the phone, but we're going to give him his penance because, you know, he's in trouble. It's 46 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Little gun club preaching the blues for our liberal confessional here. Let's see. So we had this guy on the line who broke up at the end. You know, in no short irony. There's nothing ironic about him sort of breaking apart and confessing that he's read 9 of the Tim LaHaye Left Behind books. He started to do research so he could, you know, sort of combat his evangelical neighbor. And now he's in over his head.
Uh-oh.
9 books into the Left Behind series, and his phone mysteriously breaks apart on him.
Well, I got a penance for him.
Yeah, I got a couple ideas myself. You shoot. What do you got?
Morningsedition.com, where all the books are at a slight discount.
Yeah.
Buy all of them. Every last one.
That's one good one. Or how about just read the real Bible? Read Revelations and realize that it's only a few pages long and that all of that is a big extrapolation. Those guys are trying to create a mythology by which people can say, well, what if it is true? You know, as many people who just read that for entertainment, many of them really believe that something like that is going to happen because it's magic. The rapture is going to happen. But also, maybe read some Steven Pinker. You know, let's get down to brass tacks and just the basic genetic propulsion of all of it, shall we? Try that. Are we done with this? I told him to read Revelations. Are we taking any more of these right now? Thank you for all your calls. I appreciate that. I was asking God, by the way, if anybody wonders when I talk like that, it's really, I have this thing that I have my own personal God that lives in my head and gives me instructions. Thank you for all your confessions. We'll try and help you another time. Right now, let's move into another type of justice. Set this up for me, Riley. So Padilla, who has been held, this guy, what's his first name?
Jose.
Jose Padilla has been held on no charges for a long time.
Since 2002. Since May 2002, when he was busted on a flight at Chicago's O'Hare Airport.
And the judge, District Court Judge Henry F. Floyd, actually, you know, a Bush appointee, did some, you know, pretty earnest judging.
Yeah, he did. What he said essentially is this. The Bush administration has to either charge Jose Padilla with a crime or release him within 45 days. Now, he's currently being held at a naval brig in Charleston, South Carolina. Now, just to set this up for the listeners, what happened here was this case went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And now it was the Supreme Court ponged it back to the lower courts.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Judge Floyd is now ruling that either the United States has got to put up or shut up. The Bush administration has said, well, and remember, they originally busted him as a material witness. Then they said he was involved in making or conspiring to make some kind of a dirty bomb. But the question here, Mark,
yes,
is whether the administration is even prepared to charge him with a crime. Because it would seem to me this is pretty cut and dried. Okay, the current conditions under which he's being held are unconstitutional, which is what the judge said. Well, then charge him.
Right.
If you got evidence that he is a dirty bomber, charge him with a crime, try him, convict him, lock him the hell up.
And this is profound because they were really trying to use this guy to set a precedent to just hold people that they suspected, which is, you know, unconstitutional, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the reasons they used were completely off the wall. You know what one of them was?
What?
That because they arrested him in an airport, he wasn't really in the United States.
Yeah, well, they did all that. Yeah. And it was great that this guy Floyd says, if you're going to hold him, if you're not going to prosecute him for anything, quote, to do otherwise would not only offend the rule of law and violate this country's constitutional tradition, but it would also be a betrayal of this nation's commitment to the separation of powers that safeguards our democratic values and our individual liberties. If you were still going to hold him without charging him. This is fascinating stuff to me.
Now, remember that Jose Padilla is a United States citizen. That's the important thing, because, you know, the Bush administration will still hold, quote, aliens as enemy combatants and hold them without trial. Remember that the other case that was involved here and which the government cited, which I believe was the Hamdi case, Yasser Hamdi, he was busted in Afghanistan, not in Chicago.
Right, but he was, I think, he lived here. He was born here, right, but
yeah,
then moved away. Now, this is the other thing. He accused the administration. This is great. He turned one of their own frames on them.
Yeah.
He was accusing the Bush administration of judicial activism. The other way. Other way, the repressive way. Usually when the Bush administration uses that frame, it's about, you know, radical, crazy people that are like civil rights.
Yeah.
You know, but now he's accusing him. This is judicial activism on the other end of the spectrum, which I thought was great.
I wonder what our new attorney general is going to do with this. This now, I guess, goes into his lap. It'll be his attorneys, I'm assuming, that will at some point be carrying forward whatever appeal the government decides to do. Now, you know, given Gonzalez's position on torture, given Gonzalez's position on the Patriot Act, I got to figure he's going to strenuously argue that Bush should have the right to hold me and you, Marin.
Well, that's it. Well, here's what it says. You know, it says that, you know, this was done, like you were saying, under the idea that, you know, it was consistent with U.S. laws and the president's war powers.
Yeah.
That, you know, and that's what you were talking about before. And in response to that, this district court judge, Henry F. Floyd, said, quote, "Moreover, such a statement is deeply troubling. If such a position were ever adopted by the courts, it would totally eviscerate the limits placed on presidential authority to protect the citizenry's individual liberties. That is directly contrary to everything that Alberto Gonzalez wants to do as attorney general."
Absolutely. Now the question for the government is this. Do you cut him loose in the next 45 days? Do you charge him? Or do you do the third thing, which is what I think they'll do, which is continue to hold him while they decide the course of the appeal?
So that's all up in the air. So we got to keep an eye on this because this has interesting implications. But nonetheless, a moment to celebrate. You know, a Bush-nominated judge who actually, you know, acted judicially.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, see, the amazing thing is they keep saying that the guy was a terrorist, he was a dirty bomber, but the question here is whether they actually have any evidence of this stuff. Because I don't think they do.
Well, wouldn't they have turned it up by now?
You would think.
So when we come back, let's talk about some other nastiness that the BTK killer.
Oh, yeah.
In Kansas. And, you know, what it implies when a church leader reveals himself to be a serial murderer. Huh. Metaphor,
and your boy's coming in, too.
Symbolism, Todd Barry will be
Todd Barry.
Very funny man.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Air America Radio.
Did you know?
Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. The show is Morning Sedition. I am Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, I am.
You're the geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, progressive utopians, tops and bottoms, vegetarians, anarchists, and, you know, ad infinitum out there of the great liberal armies. I don't want to call you armies, though. Hordes. How about that? Liberal hordes. How would that be?
Hordes. Hordes.
You know what I haven't done in a while? Quick update. How about a Mark update? You know what I mean? I've been relatively non-self-indulgent for the last 3 or 4 days. Going on 3 weeks without meat, folks. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Kalo's going to owe me $40. I'm getting some meat Jones.
You're going to roll over some Double or Nothing action.
Yeah, dude, I am getting a meat Jones, though. You know
really?
What I mean? Yeah, because I went out and bought my wife some salam. You know what I mean?
Oh.
She likes Genoa salami, so I got some cold cuts, I got some turkey, some salami, and it was that moment where I'm like, ah, you know, like I remember feeling it when I first quit using drugs and drinking, you know, that sort of like right, that part of your body is just like, oh, that's me, that's part of me,
Give me that.
And then the having to stop myself is brutal. Last night when we went out for an anniversary, my wife, you know, on top of my own, you know, personal eating disorders, my own fear of fat. We have dinner at this place for our anniversary. My wife orders, you know when you get cheesecake in this city, New York cheesecake, it's like, here, have a car-sized piece of cheesecake.
Is that the stuff they put up in the display case?
Yeah, sure. Can I have a slice of cheesecake? I didn't mean all the cheesecake in the city, thank you. But that was, but it was good, though. You know, I let myself do it. The cats. Cats are all doing well, warming up. Monkey doing very well. The male's been my friend for a while. LaFonda, the most attractive cat in the world, is now starting to let me pet her if I have food in the proximity of my hand.
LaFonda.
I can sort of go like, here's food, and look, I'm touching you. Oh, and the other one, Hissy's doing it. Yeah, LaFonda, my wife named her. I don't ask me. So now, that's her name, though. That's her name. What are you laughing at? Tim's laughing. Tim the librarian.
Tim the librarian.
Quiet Tim, the chief over there at the board. Chief Bromden, you know, he never laughs. All of a sudden, there's some sounds coming out of his head that sounds like laughter. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for the laughter.
Hey.
So I get this from a listener, How to Talk to Your Cat. This is like it's an old book. It looks like it was done in 1985. And it's got, look at this little woman, this woman, not little woman, but this woman on with her little cat on front. But it's got a meow chart. Riley. It's got a glossary, okay, of what
meows cat sounds.
Now, there's a couple of things. Like this, you know, I read this book. That was a weird thing to see me sitting at home reading the How to Talk to Your Cat book and actually, you know, parsing it as if it's like, this could be helpful to me. There's some interesting stuff in here, but I don't want to get into that part of my heart, okay? Now, my wife is reading it seriously tomorrow because my wife's half hippie. And she is. She won't admit it, but she's half hippie. And it's got this this whole meow chart of, like, which ones, like, this one, mew, that's a polite plea for help. And
whoa.
Mew, that's an urgent plea for help, is when the kitten is lost. And then you have mew, which is not different than the top mew, but apparently means a plea for care and or attention.
Okay.
And then you have meow, that's a command to give care and or attention, a command. All right, and as we move down, we got a mewp, which I've never heard.
Mute?
Which is righteous indignation. And then this meow, 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 meow is a panicky call for help as when the cat is being molested. Now, wait a minute. I think there was a point of projection here, perhaps, on behalf of the author, that maybe that's the editor should have taken that out along with, you know, where it said, meow, stop it. You're not nice, Uncle Joe. You know,
that
you know what I mean? At what point does it cross over? Molesting the cat? Am I being wrong? I just thought, you know, to me that was like, well, maybe an editor should have caught that one. Other than that, very helpful book, and I appreciate the input. Let's get back to what we were talking about before. We got this list. This Frank Lutz.
Oh,
14
Frank
words,
Lutz, yeah.
Frank Lutz. Lutz is the guy who's my orthodontist that put the braces on my teeth. Dr. Lutz in Albuquerque, New Mexico. They didn't work, all right? 2 years into having braces, he's like, wow, you need surgery on your jaw. We're taking these off. 2 years, I was handicapped by the worst kind of braces. You need surgery on your jaw. You have an underbite, and we need surgery. One time, when my mother and I went to find out what was wrong with my teeth and my jaw, one of the orthodontists pulled out pictures of Rondo Hatton, you know, the famous movie actor who had acromeglia. He's like, this could be happening to your son. This big anyways, I digress. Frank Luntz, 14 words, never to use, was distributed initially to Republican politicians' wives, so they could lie for their spouses and also guide their spouses in case their spouses lapsed into normal speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But this is basically a glossary of reframing. And we're up to number four, which is, we did that one actually, five, which is never say a global economy / globalization / capitalism. Instead, say free market economy. And his reasons are globalization represents something foreign. You don't want people here in this country to think that, you know, it has anything to do with anything foreign. Isn't that what he says there, Riley?
Yeah, he's saying essentially that Americans like to think small and that globalization represents something big, something distant. So for
makes
him
feel small.
Yeah.
Like they might lose things.
Yeah. And, you know, it's very slick how he, you know, how he kind of ties all these different threads together. Because, you know, America likes to believe that it is number one at
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you reframe globalization, when you talk about a free market economy, you're then putting it in a context that Americans associate with themselves.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's
right.
What America has is a free market economy. Globalization implies something that is not, therefore, American.
Here's something that's insidious as well. Six, never say outsourcing. Instead, say taxation, regulation, litigation, innovation, or education. It says we should never use the word outsourcing because we will then be asked to defend or end the practice of allowing companies to ship American jobs overseas. Rather, we should talk about the root cause why any company would not want to hire the best workers in the world. And the answer, overtaxation, overregulation, too much litigation. That this is just, it's such complete propaganda here.
Well, yeah, but the thing about Frank Luntz,
they don't blame the corporation at all.
No, because they're using corporate language.
Of course.
But the thing is, he's been successful with it. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
And, you know, Frank Luntz is one of these guys, his company does the focus group kind of research that has become a staple of American life without most Americans even knowing it. I participated, believe it or not, once in a cigar focus group. And, you know, they gather a bunch of people in a room and they, you know, they ask you different questions about how stuff is packaged, how stuff looks, whether you prefer it this way or
right.
that way. And what he does is test these words out on people, on these focus groups. And when people react, for example, negatively to the term globalization or negatively to the term privatization. He then realizes it's time to change the nature of the game.
And exploit people's like lack of education, exploit people's ignorance. He knows, I think, basically, inherently, that most people, like when we talked to Governor Schweitzer in Montana, that most people don't have time to keep up to speed on what real issues are about and what they're built on and what their roots are. So if you can just exploit their ignorance to, you know, and cap it with something tight and simple that they can understand, they get very excited by that because they're children.
Well, I mean, if you say to somebody, where did you get the word, the term personal accounts instead of privatization? You know what they're going to tell you? Well, that's what I saw on TV. Or that's
right.
What I read in
because
the newspaper.
Because it leaks into the media.
Yes.
So, of course, this guy wouldn't be mentioning anything about corporations because he is the corporation. He represents the corporations. He is duping people who may not even know what they're saying into saying certain things because it's like a gift. You know, you never tell like a kid, like a four-year-old, it's like, go tell your Uncle Charlie that and he'll be impressed. And they're like, oh, really? Yeah. Because he, you know, it's like, hey, we're going to give you a gift of these words that'll baffle your friends. You'll be the life of the party.
But you know what's at the root of all
this? The Republican Party.
Yes. You know what's at the root of this? Frank Luntz and a lot of other pollsters and behaviorists believe this: that life for Americans and for most people is 80% emotion and 20% intellect. Therefore, you have to reach people at their emotional center. And leave the intellectual stuff, leave the broad policy-making stuff for that small group of people that really pay attention.
That have brainwashed the emotional people.
Yeah.
Exactly. I understand. And when we come back, Riley, I've got to get back into this thing we were talking about before, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention.
Air Jesus!
There's something about James Dobson and his son,
mm-hmm.
the second Dobson. The even more evil Dobson that I want to share with people. And I also want to share about another religious man, perhaps, the BTK killer in Kansas. Head of his church, Presidente.
Alleged killer.
Alleged president of the church?
No, alleged killer.
Oh, okay. Definitely the president of the Lutheran Church. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition, the facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition, don't be stupid. I'm testing out slogans.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? A catchphrase? Or,
yeah.
Don't be stupid. How about...
the phrase that pays. That
morning Sedition, it feels like thinking.
There you go.
Yeah. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So I just got myself this brand new iNews 5000 right here. It's a Wi-Fi headline translator. And let's crank it up and feed some headlines. Let's use Brendan's intro. Okay. From the New York Times. Bin Laden aide urged to attack outside Iraq, U.S. reports. Eat that, machine. Translation. Bin Laden starting to repeat himself. Aides worry about his mental health. From Fox News. Millionaire begins solo flight around the world. Millionaire begins solo flight around the world. Here's a translation. Will circle globe in basket suspend from inflated ego? Wow, that's kind of poetic. It's almost like a haiku. Okay, in basket, suspend from inflation. All right, from the Associated Press. Cow urine offered as cure-all. Translation, panicky pharmaceutical companies rush to ban low-priced Canadian cow urine.
Ooh.
There you go. How about a Brendan outro? It's the trickling off. I think we could bolster the production on that just a little. Like, does the echo make him seem too far away? Shouldn't it be like, you know, right up? Maybe we
No. I like it. You know what I like about the echo? When it trails off, it's like he's like running out of the room.
I'm never going to get tired of it. Wait.
Yeah.
P.W. McDonald on the intro and outro there. All right, so now we were talking before, and I just wanted to bring this up because it's too much for me to pass up on, about this National Religious Broadcasters Convention. Now, this was these guys. The theme of the convention was Christians were victims. All right, first of all, you can't claim that and still claim to have elected this president. It's bullcrap. And second of all, there's just all these, you know, fractured groups of people under the umbrella of Christian broadcasting. You have people who are against reproductive freedom. You have evangelical people who are Zionists who want the rapture to happen. You have more mainstream types like James Dobson. You know, everybody knows who Dobson is. He is the guy that, from Focus on the Family, that's his particular brigade of the neocon death cults, crystal fascist zombie brigades.
And you know he started, don't you?
How?
A radio talk show.
There you go. Now, apparently, he's the guy that says, you know, he talks about SpongeBob SquarePants as being... Here's how shameless this idiot is, all right? Quote, all I said about SpongeBob is he was part of a video produced by a group with strong links to the homosexual community that's teaching things like tolerance and diversity.
Oh, no, not that!
But it's just like he doesn't even try to hide it. It's like tolerance and diversity, bad. Bad! All right? And you can see where they're going with that. They're teaching kids to think different about homosexuality. Oh, do you mean to accept people as people? But this is not the issue. For me, the issue is this: at the Religious National Broadcasters, I always call it National Religious Broadcasters Convention.
Yeah.
Dobson was presenting his son Ryan. Now, Ryan is the heir apparent, the spawn of Dobson.
Yes.
This is the guy that's supposed to take over the family business. He was adopted, doesn't matter here nor there, but it's in this piece. It went out of its way to say that he is the adopted son of James Dobson. But what's really frightening is that, basically he said that kids today, this is a quote from Ryan Dobson, kids today are looking for something to die for. They're looking for a cause. If you give them something to die for, they'll go to the edge of the earth for you. Kids like that give me hope for revolution in America, end quote. This is one of the, heir apparents to one of the largest Christian propaganda organizations in this country. And I'm not talking about every Christian, as some people criticize me as doing. I'm talking to Christians that believe that everybody need to behave in lockstep with them and in, a certain type of goose step as well. I believe that these people want nothing more than to make this a Christian culture that is repressive, regressive, and denies people rights and based on anything but Christian values. And this is a guy, this is the heir apparent to one of the primary crystal fascist zombie brigades, Focus on Family, basically saying that what we need to do is give these kids, the kids of today, something that they are willing to die for to start a revolution. Now, I'm just saying, heed that.
Well, that's the name of his book, To Die For.
Okay.
And that follows his other book, Be Intolerant Because Some Things Are Just Stupid.
Yeah, and this is the way it starts. This is the way that, activated fascism starts.
But you know what? This is, they've thrown down the gauntlet here. They are saying, look, this is our agenda. This is what we're doing. They have a whole thing about spreading the gospel out to cities all over the country. Well, you know what? You've got to fight it. That's the thing. It's one thing for the left or for progressives to sit back and acknowledge the fact that this kind of wacko kind of nonsense exists. But the other side of the equation is, these people are prepared to battle for the hearts and minds of our children.
Right. And in this language, if they claim it's metaphoric or symbolic or whatever they want to claim, the idea is that these people are willing to see. And there was another person in this article that they talked about who was literally creating Christian cells.
Yeah.
In Central America.
Yeah.
From
Bolivia.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, in South America then. But don't underestimate that this is just the mirror image of fanatic Islam. I mean, these people have the same agenda, yet they'll accuse them as having an imperialistic agenda. These people want nothing more than for kids, even ones that are at the edge of sanity to begin with, to go do horrible things. I believe this to be true. You don't speak with that kind of language strictly as a metaphor. I believe they're a real threat. I'm sorry we didn't get to the BTK killer, that'll be unfolding for the week, and we'll draw our analogies there. And also, Frank Luntz is, we're going to do more of his talking points in the next couple days, because we got Todd Berry coming out now, and it's going to be funny time. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
If Thirty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley there.
Yo,
it's Morning Edition on Air America Radio. This is like we got Todd Barry coming up, and I announced that it would be funny time, and I'm sure he's going to give me flack for that when he comes out here because what a silly thing to say. I'm going to get ready for funny time.
Whoa.
Anyways, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now, on the phone once again, it's Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a snowblower, and he's cleaning the sin off the side.
Okay, great. All right, buddy, look.
Clean.
Yes, I know. Let's start talking about Social Security, Lawton.
Oh, let's do. I'm as worried as you are, Mark. Security will come in your home and rape your pet. This has been a pus-filled boil festering on America's backside for 60 years now. It's time to lance that sucker. Abomination.
Now, let's wait. Lawton, back up. Aren't you overreacting a little bit here, Lawton?
Not one bit. If you listen to George W. Two-Term's mandate,
all right,
you would know that Social Security is the worst economic crisis in American history.
Wait a minute.
It's a catastrophe, a mudslide, a tsunami.
All right, look, Lawton, the Great Depression was the worst economic crisis in American history. That's why we have Social Security in the first place, so that old people will never have to go through that kind of ruin and despair and humiliation ever again, okay?
Listen to me now. The Great Depression was the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people.
What?
Worse than the moon landing.
What?
Worse than global warming.
Wait, back up. The Depression was a hoax?
Phony as a $3 bill, Mark. Look at the facts about the so-called Great Depression.
Okay.
One, do I remember it? No.
That
should tell you a lot right there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Two, does anyone I know remember it? No. So
wait a
this
minute.
Whole web of lies is unraveling. The liberal textbooks have been spewing out water.
Hold on, Lawton.
You've been eating it.
Wait a minute. What about the soup lines, massive unemployment, the Dust Bowl, starvation, the grapes of wrath? Come on.
Lies. Every word out of Henry Fonda's mouth in that film was a lie.
No.
Jane Darwell, too.
Oh.
The Bolshevik communists over there in Moscow orchestrated this lie that America was having some sort of alleged economic collapse so they could install one of their own as president.
Whoa. One of their own?
Franklin D. Roosevelt, Mark.
Yeah?
He is in deceiver, demon, dirty killer.
Oh, come on. This is nuts. All right, Roosevelt was a great American, a compassionate visionary.
FDR was a communist puppet of Joseph Stalin.
Oh,
he grew up right inside the Kremlin. Did you know that?
Wait a minute.
He was redder than a baboon's keister.
He was a Democrat from New York, Lawton.
Yeah, that's what I said. Redder than a
baboon's keister.
Yeah, after the Bolsheviks stole the election for him, Roosevelt and Stalin came up with Social Security. And all that hard-earned American money went straight to Moscow to finance bizarre mind-control experiments on little children.
No.
And puppies.
Oh, wait a minute.
FDR used to hotwire puppies.
Whoa. Come on.
Knows that.
Social Security. No. It was devised so that the working Americans could be. Come on. Think about it. It was devised so working Americans wouldn't be wiped out in their old age if the economy collapsed because of the short-sighted policies of greedy Republicans like the people you like.
Thank you for proving my point. That kind of communist mind control rhetoric is the cornerstone of the welfare state mentality. You're a slave.
Uh-huh.
You know, God bless him. Reagan couldn't kill that kind of talk. And here's hoping Bush will be able to put a bullet in that.
Listen to me. Listen to me. Social Security is the most successful social program in the history of this country, Lawton, and you hate that because it closes the gap between the haves and that. Stop that. You would sacrifice. Would you sacrifice? You would, actually, the well-being of millions of Americans for generations just so you and your cronies could make a few more bucks in the short term. You're trying to tear down FDR and his legacy because none of you ever have had half the imagination or half of his genius. That's right. Cry, you little baby. Yeah. What's the matter now? What?
Annie is my favorite musical.
Oh, my God.
And FDR is in that. He
makes
everything better for the poor orphans.
There you go.
Good man.
Let it out, buddy.
He loves them all.
Okay.
I don't know why Bush hates you so much.
Okay.
The sun will come out.
Oh.
Tomorrow.
No.
Bring your mom
Let it out, buddy. But you got to stop singing.
You got to stop singing.
You know, just, but, I'm glad, man. I'm glad we have these moments where you can, you know, find your real self. You know. You all right? What's up?
You know, FDR pretended to have polio just to get the bad luck. Charleston and Foxtrot.
No.
I have video of it.
No. Goodbye, Lawton. Yeah, we're going to talk about this again. All right?
God loves you. New deal with it.
Okay. Thank you, Lawton.
I'll talk to you,
I'm sure. Now, in the studio, one of my oldest friends in the world. We're still buddies, aren't we?
I'm sorry, what was your name?
Yeah, Mark Maron. Right now, his new CD, Falling Off the Bone, is available in stores. It's available out through the mail. I see it on Comedy Central.
Yeah, you can buy it at stores. Whatever your favorite way to buy my CD is.
www.toddberry.com.
Yeah.
Is that it? And you're going to be at Caroline's the 23rd and 30th of this month
and
tonight, or this weekend, at the Laugh Lounge, which is downtown.
Downtown Lower East Side, Essex Street.
Yeah, is that a good place?
It is. If you like lounging and laughing.
Now, those of you don't remember, Todd Berry was on our show once before. Let's hear a little bit of that. Did you want to talk to Todd?
Nobody else did, so I thought.
Ken, what's going on?
I just felt bad for Todd.
You got buns on Milwaukee.
I was just wondering, what do I win for calling up to talk to Todd?
Wow. Yeah. You didn't tell me about this.
Oh, this is not a good precedent.
You guys are saying?
No, it's Todd.
You guys are, that was a sucker punch.
No, man, come on.
I had nothing to do with it.
What, you didn't say, hey, Todd, we want to let you know we're going to be playing a best of montage of
I would have played
the people feeling sorry for me.
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and solicit calls now just in case. 866-303-2270 if you want to talk to Todd. Berry.
I wanted to ask you, did you get a fax from my manager? I wanted to be introduced as it's funny time. I don't know if you, it's just the only requirement I have that you're supposed to say it's funny time.
I don't know where that came from. I don't know why I said that.
I think it has been funny time, so it really...
It's been funny time.
In retrospect, it was the perfect intro.
So how was it? How was that show last night? That was huge.
It was huge. 200 people.
Oh, my God! Sold
out! At the Zipper Theater. It was good.
It was Louis Black, you and Giraldo?
Me, Giraldo, Louis Black, Demetri Martin, Benjamin, and Glazer.
Wow.
I know.
Big
now I'm going to start making people up. Beatles reunion.
So, did you watch the Oscars at all?
I did, and I want to defend Jude Law as well.
I missed the whole thing.
The Sean Penn?
I got to go to bed at 7. I'm going to watch it tonight, perhaps.
It was a good moment.
Yeah?
Defending someone who was the victim of what was obviously a joke.
I heard he got really heavy-handed.
He got a little self-righteous about it. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty lighthearted.
No sense. It was like, did you think Chris Rock did a good job?
Yeah, and I just want to ask Sean Penn, if you're listening, and you might be. I will work with you in film. I'm just talking about this one thing.
We're in a movie together. We're in that Mitch Hedberg movie.
We're in the Mitch Hedberg movie.
Go Central, which is apparently impossible to get anywhere.
I know. I get emails. I'm in the only movies that well, that's not true. But some movies, I'm in movies like where people email me, how do you see this movie? I don't know how you see this movie.
I know people, because I guess on his website, on Hedberg's website, he talks about Los Enchiladas, but he hasn't made it available to anybody.
I know.
And I don't even have a copy of it.
I know.
Maybe I do. But I can't. There's nothing I can do. What, am I going to make tapes of it for people? Yeah, I'll make you one. I'll burn one for you.
I know. I don't even sign autographs. So am I talking?
You do too.
I know.
How's the record selling? Pretty good.
It sold 1.9 million copies.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
1.9 million copies.
Opening day, it sold 1.9 million.
Still has time to hang out with us.
I know.
Todd Berry.
Wow, that's more stuff than Snoop Dogg
knows. He's lying.
Oh.
He's lying. So what else is going on?
Nothing. But, you know, I don't usually talk about the news because that's not really my strength, but I did page 6 in the Post. I'm kind of concerned.
What's the matter?
They were able to snag a picture of Jim Belushi riding a scooter with his daughter, and his daughter's wearing a helmet, but Jim's not.
Wow.
I have a death wish. I'm worried about Jim.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Maybe Jim took his helmet off for his kid. I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe.
That was an example of funny time, me being.
Yeah. Todd Berry here with funny time.
I said,
calls are pouring in again, Todd.
Hey, it's not about, I don't even want calls.
Oh, really?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I don't want calls. Are there any calls?
As
I look at the light,
303-2270 for Todd Berry. Where you been lately? Any place interesting? Have you
I was in. I was in. I was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
For 4 nights.
Uh huh.
Because to accommodate all the fans I have in Pittsburgh,
for a big night,
I have to do more shows than the Rolling Stones did on their last tour.
How'd those shows go, Tom?
They're all right. But a woman came up to me after one of them, and it was a good show.
Yeah.
I do have bad shows, but this was a good one. Uh-huh. And she goes, I just want to say, you are so much better live than you are on Comedy Central. Thank you.
Yeah.
Some people would have just said, hey, good show.
Right. But how about that one where they go, where they confuse your joke with the guy who opened for
right.
you? I hate that.
And then you have to just, that was the other guy who you liked.
Oh, where's that guy? Can I meet that guy?
You're not doing the road anymore?
Yeah, I do. I was just out. I did a big sold-out show at Symphony Space. Thank you very much.
Really?
Yeah, in the Thalia Theater at Symphony Space, a one-man show. Yeah, just stand up, but I did that. And I was, where was I? I went to Seattle to do my CD. It went good. I don't know when the guy's ever going to release it, though. Now it's like it's done. He's like, it's great. When's it coming out? Couldn't tell you.
Really?
No, he's going to release it. He's just doing the big mixing. Don't they have to do big mixing?
Yeah, there's a lot of mixing involved in a comedy.
Got a call for Todd. Should we take it now or should we take a break? Let's take a break and we'll come back with Todd Barry. It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Bye.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. We're going to land this thing. That's Mark Riley over there.
Yes, it is.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We got Todd Barry, comedian, provocateur.
Yeah, I'm a provocateur.
Yeah. Todd Barry's album, Falling Off the Bone, available in record stores on www.toddbarry.com. On television, you can get it. Do they have it at laugh.com, where you can get my CD occasionally?
I like the way you muscled in a plug for your CD. Hey, speaking of CDs, I have a CD also, Tom.
No, it's just this. Have you been to laugh.com?
Yeah,
it's huge.
It's a database.
Everything. It's unbelievable. They have like really weird old stuff. You're going to be at Caroline's the 23rd and 30th of
two
this
consecutive
month.
Wednesdays. You're looking for something to do at 9:30 Wednesday, 23rd.
And this weekend at the Laugh Lounge here in New York. We got a call for you, Todd. Laura in Sacramento, what's on your mind for Todd?
Oh, hey, I just wanted to say, I thought that Todd's talking about Jim Belushi not wearing a helmet was actually really funny.
Well, he was actually really funny? Wow.
I really thought it was funny. I think it explains a lot about Jim Belushi.
But all I'm focusing on is why would you say it's actually funny? You heard that this was set up as funny time, right, Laura from Sacramento?
I think it's just, maybe I'm just twisted, but I thought it was funny.
Guys,
you're not making things better by saying, no, you see, I'm crazy. That's why I thought it was funny.
Yeah. No. I think she was giving me an honest compliment, but you can mangle it into something.
I'm going
to
mangle it.
Hey, Laura, let's see if Todd will get you to hate him by the end of this conversation.
Why do you live in Sacramento, though, Laura? That's the question I want to
ask. Because of work. I'm actually from Detroit.
Do you work at a Mongolian barbecue?
Oh, see that.
No, there's a lot of them in Sacramento.
Yeah, there are, but I'm vegetarian, so.
Oh, well.
I'm recently vegetarian myself.
Are you one of those vegetarians who won't eat Altoids because they're made with gelatin?
No, I'm not that extreme.
Well, then you are not a vegetarian. Because that's equivalent to eating a steak dinner.
Oh, right. God.
You should go to the Mongolian barbecue.
Okay, so now are you going to... He's not funny anymore, is he, Laura?
She's laughing nonstop. Okay. Not only am I funny, I'm actually funny.
Uh-oh.
Thanks for your call, Laura.
Thanks, Laura.
That's it.
She was nice.
She was very nice. Note to self, don't call radio show again.
I tried to give the guy a compliment. Massacre.
Is there a lot of Mongolian barbecues in Sac?
Yeah, and there's people... You never been to one?
Well, I've been to Sacramento a couple of times.
You don't go to the Chili's instead of the Mongolian barbecue.
There's the Chili's right by that club.
I know, but there's also Mongolian, but where people, they say no packing. You fill a bowl with vegetables and frozen meat.
Yeah.
And then they have these guys who have the most boring job in the world just kind of stirring it around on this flat grill. But hey, no packing, but people like, they have a no packing rule.
Oh, so you can't cram it in
containers? Yeah, but people violate that rule.
Have you packed?
Hey, no.
Okay. So now tell me about this this tour that you just did. You were playing rock clubs?
I did rock clubs. I did a six-night, I should face everyone. I did a six-night, I'm the worst. I did a six-night tour of rock clubs
Wow.
6 nights in a row, people.
Uh-huh.
It's the most grueling tour.
So you were doing rock clubs, and that's like, I guess that's better because people come to see you.
Right.
Are there expectations different? Who opened for you?
I had various bands. And Nashville, I had a band. You know the television album, Marquee Moon?
Of course, yes. Great album.
They played the entire album. They played side one before I went on and side two after.
Was that because they were like, oh, we're just opening for a comedian. Let's just do this. This will be easier.
Let's
no
just learn an entire album.
Yeah. So, but, oh, come on.
It's
you
fun
did that record, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah.
But so when you do a rock club, are the crowds like, do they treat you like a rock star?
Well, they're standing, which is kind of interesting.
That always bothers me. You have no problem with that. We did that gig in Brooklyn. You know, when people are standing up, I'm like, oh, my, okay, so this will only take a few minutes.
I know. There is a guilt. You know? I don't even like standing for rock shows.
Yeah,
I basically don't like standing.
when you do standing,
I might buy a wheelchair. I might buy a wheelchair.
So what do you think about this? You were just reading the paper, and this killer in Kansas.
No, I just noticed his new, because everyone's saying, oh, he's a shocking.
Yeah.
But his new picture, that new mugshot, he kind of looks like a killer in this one.
Yeah, yeah. The,
oh, wow.
The new headshot is definitely killer.
Yeah.
If you're looking to cast a killer, this is the guy.
The other one was like, hey, they got the wrong guy. But that was like his ID badge from work or something.
Yeah. From ADT. He used to work for the security company.
Yeah. Oh, that gives me the creeps because I got ADT at my house. And just to know that guys like that are like the people that you're supposed to be trusting to, you know, to rig your house up properly.
Cable installer.
Oh, my God. So are you a voice on some cartoon?
Oh, yeah, I'm on Romulox on Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Are you a regular at that? I mean,
I've done 2 episodes.
Whoa, that's regular.
Is that a new thing?
I did them a while ago.
Oh, but you're on there.
I'm on it, and that DVD is selling a lot.
Is it?
Yeah.
Does that mean that you get
I get Zippo.
Good for you.
I don't know. Somewhere in the contract
who or what is Romulox?
You know, he's like a bad guy, a monster. It's sad because I did it and kids come up to me. Yeah, kids.
Yeah, kids that are
30. I do only all ages shows at American Legion Hall.
Kids come up to you who are 30.
Who are 35 and
horror rim glasses and their windbreakers.
What is that? What character do you play? And then I tell them, they go, what is that? And they either know it or they go, what is he? And I go,
I've only watched it once or twice.
It's a good show.
The French fries, the hamburger. And
Yeah.
What does it sound like, Romulus?
He sounds like me. Any voiceover I've ever done, they go, just do your own voice. I can do characters.
That's
my woo-woo-woo character.
Do you just, I'm just old school Todd. Yes.
I did that. I was on Dr. Katz. You were on Dr. Katz.
I was on Dr. Katz, but not regular, just me being me.
What's that?
He just gave me a signal. That means that you're almost done.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, we were just starting to loosen up, weren't we?
I think it's sad for people driving in the cars who are now realizing that funny time is almost over.
The funny time's almost over and that you're actually funny.
I know, Max.
Oh, see, man.
My mother heard that from her sister that I was pretty extraordinary at my one-man show.
People love to soften their compliments.
Yeah, I know.
I think she should have said that Jim Belushi thing was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
And to buy your album at www.toddberry.com.
You can't actually buy it through my website, but you can visit my website. But I do appreciate the multiple hits I'll be getting. The spike. When I check my stats.
You do check, how many times a day do you check it?
I'm just thinking how many this morning.
Todd, we're going to let you go. Yeah, you're going to be at the Laugh Lounge this week downtown Manhattan.
Last time I was on for like 4 hours on the show.
There's our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. But hang out though. Let me read this. Here are your marching orders for today. 1, ignore the calendar. Black History Month isn't over until we say it is. 2, today begins Women's History Month. That's spelled WOMYN. And it's not over until we say it is. 3, call Martin Scorsese. Assure him that losing the Oscar for the 6th time will ensure that his work maintains its invigorating cynicism. That's right, bitterness propels. 4, counter the new Pentagon channel with your own conscientious objector channel. Then 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Hope you're enjoying the Michael Jackson trial. This planet's going right down the dumper. And hey, don't let me bring you down. When your kids are ready to collect their Social Security and nothing's there, tell them you were busy watching Jacko. Wake up, sheeple. You're the ones being molested. Oh, all my God. Right. Thank you, Todd. Again?
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mark Riley. What do we got tomorrow? You got something there that says that?
Tomorrow we've got two of the people behind the new film Gunner Palace, which talks about an artillery unit in Iraq as they struggle to secure the street.
I got to watch that tonight.
It's incredible. So, yeah, we definitely have to watch it. So we'll be up on it tomorrow. Good day today, Maren.
You too. We'll see you tomorrow for Funny Time.
That's right. Happy birthday, Vivica.
Morning Tradition on Air America Radio.